Hello. In this especially emergent episode of Emerge, Bonita Roy, Jordan Greenhall, and myself attempt to generate some actionable clarity in response to a recent video critiquing Jordan Peterson, created by the organization Alter Ego, which is a metamodern political organization created by previous guest of the show, Ronan Harrington. So this video was a kind of summary and critique of the phenomenon known as Jordan Peterson from the metamodern perspective. So that's the kind of context out of which this show arose, this conversation arose. And so I would strongly suggest that if you haven't seen that video, that you pause this podcast and give it a watch. It's about 6 minutes long or so, and I think it will give some much-needed context for the conversation you're about to experience. And this conversation itself is a particularly raw and kind of liminal conversation. And so, that being the case, it's very aligned with the name of the show, the name of the experiment, Emerge. And that's exciting to me. This is a different kind of podcast. It's a different kind of media, I think. And I'm excited about that. And it's quite vulnerable. And to be honest, I feel nervous about releasing it. I feel nervous about putting myself out there in this way. And it feels like that's okay. That's okay. And I hope that it's interesting to you. I hope that it's provocative to you. And I hope that it inspires you or inspires something in you. And if it does, please let me know. Reach out. Say how it affected you. Tell me if you'd like more. I think it's a very interesting conversation to take part in. That I am sure of. I learned a lot by taking part in it. Whether or not it's a useful thing to share, whether or not it is a benefit to those who are listening, I don't know. And I would appreciate that feedback if it occurs to you to offer it. So without further ado, please enjoy this very emergent episode of Emerge. Welcome to another episode of Emerge. This time on the show, we have a special treat, which is our first ever, group conversation. And I have with me both Jordan Greenhall and Bonita Roy, both of whom have been on the show before. And our goal today, this is an emergent conversation that came out of a recent video that was released by the organization in Europe called Alter Ego. And the person who runs that, I interviewed on the show, Ronan Harrington, released a video sort of critiquing Jordan Peterson, we might say, from, or at least engaging him in dialogue, from a meta-modern political perspective. And out of that video and the kind of comment threads and the responses, both Jordan and Bonita felt like there's a conversation that wants to happen here that maybe can lead us to a higher degree of clarity and sort of make some things that we might be blind to a little bit clearer, a little bit more tangible. And with that as a kind of general framing, we're going to attempt to have a skillful conversation about this video and about the ideas in the video. And the process that we're going to use is that we're actually going to be pausing and reflecting on the conversation as we're having it
while we're having it. And so we might call this, I think Jordan called it, a kind of meta move, or even perhaps a meta move. We'll reveal, I think, as we continue to go on, what that actually looks like. But don't be scared if we start to reflect on the conversation as we're having it. That is, you know, part of how we think, our hypothesis is, that will help us have a really skillful and beautiful and actually useful conversation. So with all that being said, would either of you want to say something about the process or about the intentions behind this call before we start to jump into the themes we're going to explore?
Well, in the context of reflecting on the conversation itself, one of the first things that occurs to me is that it might be useful to have a sense of orientation. Oftentimes, conversations, particularly in the modern environment, particularly in the social media environment, have a certain noisiness to them or abruptness to them. And that having a sense of orientation of, okay, well, where, for example, am I coming from when I come into this conversation, might allow the conversation to find itself, to find its central meaning. What is the thing that is, in fact, worthy of attending to here, more quickly and more with less effort? So in that context, what I would say is that when I observed the video that you mentioned that Alter Ego produced, essentially I saw two primary things. The first was that the most important piece of the video to me was not so much the content, but rather the fact that there was an evidenced ability to be conscious of an attitude of disposition towards the conversation. You know, it was very similar to just the basic idea of, you know, if you're feeling angry, take three deep breaths before you say anything. You know, literally as simple as that. But a notion of, hey, there's something going on here that has caused conversations that invoke the magic words Jordan Peterson to not actually be able to be engaged in anything that we might call conversation. And so we're going to try to be conscious of that and endeavor to think, or at least reflect a little bit on what's going on here. So that was the first part. And as far as that goes, that was, to me, the part that was the most interesting. And then the second part was, in that context, what I find most interesting is that the next step is to almost immediately get away from the notion of having a conversation about a given individual or thinker, which creates a remove of agency. In fact, simply do it. Do the thing that we are talking about. So let us no longer speak of and about, for example, Jordan Peterson. Let us actually just speak from who we are and about those things that are the meaningful things for us to engage in, that are ours to do. So this is the what brings me into this conversation, is that set of noticings and considerations.
So what I noticed that was happening in my relationship to the video was, so I liked the way it started off to say, you may be in this situation where you're toggling between loving Jordan Peterson or hating Jordan Peterson, you know, so I set it up as a lived expression that might be percolating in you. And I thought that was genuine. And then in terms of design, he shows Russell Brand and Jordan Peterson talking, and you can see they're both very animated, authentic in their ideas, right? So you can see this. And so the interesting question is, how can people show up animated and authentic and be not on the same page? So this is a an interesting question. And one of the comments I had made is something that the developmental psychologist Suzanne Cook-Greuter has told me many times. Bonnie, just because it's authentic and profound doesn't mean it's universal. So this is a big, because what we saw was that they were in their authentic body. Yes. And, you know, and they were both authentic. And so I thought that was a really nice illustration of the pickle we seem to be in. So that was for me the kind of like setup of the video. What I was left with was, I think I used the word, the term despair. So what I was left with was when he was talking about, well, what's the move then? Not, and it's not like, he didn't say, let these perspectives live in the space. There was a move toward, let's contextualize them. It's the meta-modern move. Let's contextualize them at a more complex, nuanced, and sophisticated level. And I happen to think that that move is not adequate to the task and leads to paralysis, lack of clarity, and lack of action. So that's my experience of the video.
So what I noticed right now at this moment is I feel a certain sense of what I guess I might call a quickening. Which is to say, on the one hand, we are at the precipice of what are very deep, and I imagine often very cold waters, that may actually be more than we can handle. We may be getting in over our heads already at this first step. That's the feeling that I have. But also, I suppose, because of the nature of how I come to be here, and also the fact that I have a pre-existing relationship with Benita, a certain sense of, and good, because as she mentioned, there's a certain pickle that we're in, and it seems unlikely to me that we're going to find a way out of that pickle unless we dive into some pretty deep and cold waters. Now, in this context, if you notice that's something you're going into, you know, to me at least, there's a certain, almost a checklist, the kind of checklist that one should always have when one is venturing into dangerous places, which is, okay, am I prepared? Are we prepared, or at least are we aware of what we're getting into? And do we maybe have some skillfulness of moving slowly enough that we can get back on track if we've gotten off track, or even use failures to increase our capacity to be able to more deeply engage as we continue to go into this sort of journey over and over again?
And Jordan, I'm curious, how would one know if we're prepared to have such a conversation?
So it seems that the beginning is the degree to which it's a funny recursion, the degree to which you're actually able to be aware of the magnitude of what you're getting yourself into. And you can sort of imagine the difference between a, say a small child going into a dangerous situation who maybe feels things in the body that are ringing alarms but doesn't quite know how significant the issue is. And say a fireman, let's say where it's a burning building, the fireman has experience. So part of it might just be a self-awareness of, have I done this sort of thing before? Or have I actually engaged in real practice before? And the degree to which you're able to notice a sense of integrity in your sense making. I think you and I talked about this. If my body is feeling certain things that indicate that things are not perfectly right, if I'm feeling maybe a clenching in my stomach or a quickening of my breath, it behooves me to notice that and to listen to that and say, okay, well, what's happening here? And if I can make sense of it, if I can name it, and I can sort of, in the context of naming it, I can actually feel a rightness emerging, that all of the different aspects of me that could perceive are saying, yeah, okay, yeah, we've got a handle on this, know where we are, then perhaps I'm prepared to move forward. If not, if I actually feel either that I have to clamp down, if I have to not listen to the aspects of me that are saying something is awry, then I'm probably not prepared. Or conversely, if I do ask, if I listen to them and I start moving into a higher level of alarm, then again, I'm probably not prepared. In that case, I should definitely step back from something which is likely beyond where I am. Maybe ask for help.
Yeah. I mean, in hearing that, Jordan, I noticed that for me, there's a level of like trust in the two of you. Like it occurs to me that I have learned so much from both of you, and I kind of like don't know that I am adequate for this conversation, but I'm hoping to like kind of learn from you and empower you and sort of see it and learn as quickly as I can on the one hand. And I also noticed that I feel really curious about something that Bonita brought up, which is the idea that just because it's authentic and profound doesn't mean it's universal, and what that actually means for us as people who are observing conversations like the video that Alter Ego released. And so I want to name both my own feelings of like inadequacy to have a really skillful conversation. And part of the reason why I started this project is to be put in spaces that might be a little uncomfortable and to have the conversations that are challenging so that I can learn to do it well. And so I kind of want to defer to the two of you because I kind of trust you. And I also want to like push it forward, even if it might be unskillful, and ask like, what does it mean if things can be authentic and profound and not universal? Like what, how should that inform us about the way that we consume content and the way that we make sense of these these issues that we're focusing on right now?
On that basis, I feel like we can in fact proceed, because as you mentioned, the thing that Bonita pointed out, A, I feel intrigued by as well, and B, I feel very comfortable that she will be able to move into that space well, and that we can go from that place and it'll be good. So
let me just tell you, you know, how that arose in, you know, I mean, it arose in my relationship with Suzanne many times, but so I'll give you the short version. But it's kind of like for years, for many of us, asking questions about our own lived experience, we have insights, we're very authentic in our inquiries, and then we get these profound insights, and they, you know, they wash over you as deep universals. And it doesn't mean they're not authentic and profound and very important. But when we hold them as universals, we start then imposing the meaning we make on them as a universal. And then we have yet another sliding perspective. And this is what I was noticing in Jordan Peterson and Russell Brand, and I've been there many times myself.
Bonita, what do you mean by a universal?
So, okay, that's a very good question. So you have an authentic and profound experience, and then you make meaning out of that, a theory or a model that you believe is generalized at a high enough context to be true for all people. This is, you know, this is, I'll just say that. So yeah, there's a step there, that step that you take to generalize it.
We are now right smack dab in the middle of a profound, and I imagine for many people, some combination of troubling or contracting or exciting issues. One of the moments of our time is in this, I guess in some sense, we're like toddlers beginning to walk, or maybe baby birds getting ready to jump out of the nest, with regard precisely to both the safety and the constraints of these kinds of universals, these kinds of general purpose models that are applied universally as opposed to domain specifically. And that makes sense that that would be both freeing and scary, because moving out of something that works in very certain ways, in fact, largely is what got us where we are, into something that we don't yet understand is for sure going to create all kinds of problems. And yet, I suppose this might be a bit of the naming of the pickle that Benito referred to earlier. It seems that these things no longer are adequate to where we find ourselves. And so, like the bird inside the egg, now I'm changing my metaphor to make it more precise, we're going to have to find a way to struggle out of it, whether we like it or not.
And so, am I understanding you right, Bonita, that you saw the kind of interpretive move made by Ronin and Alter Ego to be another move in this universalizing approach? Or what, did they escape that trap?
No, so there's, now there's, we have to make a distinction. Thank you, Jordan, for reminding us we should go slow. So the authentic and profound is the experience between Jordan Peterson and Russell Brand. That applied to that part of the video. Then there was another different kind of statement. I mean, I'm sure that, what's his name? Alter Ego, that's what I mean. I'm sure he's had authentic and profound experiences, but I don't think that's how he wrapped it up. He was, that was my other statement. What was going on for me in his contribution, his summary of the end, was this move to contextualize. I mean, I don't know if he's had an authentic and profound experience watching Russell Brand and Jordan Peterson. I think my, at the end, it was more like one of these metacognitive moves to find a perspective that contextualizes both perspectives. Okay, it doesn't necessarily have to, they're not the same thing. So, and that was, so that was, they're two different comments I made. And they weren't going on at the same time. So neither Jordan Peterson nor Russell Brand were standing back and making the contextualized move. But I didn't get the impression that the guy at the end was having an authentically and profound experience. I mean, I'm sure he has, but that's not what was happening. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
So maybe to maybe use the material that brought us here as a way of moving forward on our own. It seems that perhaps a place that we can, that we are equipped to chew on and that is valuable is this question of what are we to do then? So we've raised a proposition that a particular move of universalization is both habitual and no longer furthers our ability to continue to be successful together. So then I guess we've got a couple of questions. One might be a backwards looking. Well, how did we get here? Why is this the case? Where did this come from? But more importantly, where do we go? And I would say that the meaning of the first part is really only to the degree to which it informs the second part. And so I'll pause for a moment just to reflect on the fact that, and this is, by the way, but Bonnie, just to kind of call it out, if anybody who happens to be listening to this is noticing an almost maddening degree of frustration with the degree to which we're having to go slowly and almost clumsily, you're not alone. It's the classic beginner's mind problem. We have become skillful masters with all sorts of beautiful dance moves and flourishes that we can put on this old approach. And moving into this new approach feels very uncomfortable because we suck at it. And I don't mean that because we suck, but because it's new and we're just beginning to learn how to do it. Nonetheless, it seems like this is the way to go forward.
That was a very good introduction, because maybe now I would like to describe, so what does that feel like? Like, And maybe Jordan, you can say if this is similar to your experience. So at every step, there's a million ways that I could jump on and talk about these things. I mean, that's what's going on in my head. There's this theory and that theory and this critique and this. There's all this stuff constellating itself in my mind. And I keep having to say, well, no, that's not interesting in this conversation. If that fixed the problem would have been long ago fixed because the books have been written about that. We've been talked. So this is a discipline. I think all of that constellated in your imagination is required because there's a lot of pieces that you can use. But what you can't say is, I'll take this whole recipe down. This will fix it, right? We're back down to seeing all the spices and choosing from there. And that's what it feels like in my head. So,
yeah, I think that's right. And in fact, it feels like that, I would say, even in my body. So I've been able to notice some parallels to other domains. And this parallel has made it very helpful. I've actually started to use the metaphors of juggling. There's a moment when you know that you don't know how to juggle, which for most people is always, including me. There's a moment when you know you're beginning to try. So it feels very awkward and it's failing like crazy because you know nothing about how to do this. The muscles, the movements, the eyes, the disposition of the balance, everything is just nonsense. And then you can become progressively better at it. And then there's the moment where you've learned how to juggle three balls. Now you know how to juggle. And then you add a fourth. Now you're actually a very interesting new place. Because on the one hand, you're aware of the fact that you have to be using many of the capacities that were developed in learning how to juggle three. And yet this new thing is very different. So you simultaneously have to move back into a learning liminal space that is available to actually go deep and redo entirely fundamental aspects of space, you know, hand-eye coordination and whatnot, while also recognizing that you have to hold the totality of all the capacities you built to juggle three balls, because most of that is going to be part of what this new thing looks like. If that metaphor doesn't work, we can imagine many others that are identical. And so this is the thing, that we're in a place where to be able to be available in this conversation well requires already to have delivered or have reached a certain level of mastery of some constellation. And then also to be now in a place of not being addicted to or in habit of or mindless about that constellation of knowing and capacity, but being able to now use it in the context of a deep liminality, a deep new learning in something, and to have a humility before that deep new learning that allows that to be done.
So when you said in habit, I think you meant we don't want to be in the habit. But my mind jumped, we don't want to inhabit those theories, right? It was great double entendre that was beautiful.
So one of the things that I have found as I've engaged in conversations of this sort is that oftentimes it reaches points where the conversation stops. And it's useful to actually allow there to be a certain recollection, like allow things, like Benita said, she has all these things popping up that are trying to be said and maybe are the next thing. And one of the things I've noticed is that the habits, the inhibitions, sometimes there's a need to actually stop, literally take a few deep breaths, settle everything down, and then allow from that new place, that place of stillness, the emergence to begin to rise.
Yeah, so, you know, for those who are listening, what you're watching is what Daniel said, Jordan warned that we might go meta, which means we are slowing, we are not in the conversation yet because we are actually looking at and preparing where we're going to be in the conversation from. And that still has energy here. So it has energy in the body, the quickening, the thing. It has, so this is what they were talking about. And so in terms of having conversations that have clarity, one of the key markers is what Jordan just said. I'm just trying to explicate a little. And that is when you stay out of the habit of all chasing all this stuff in your mind, one of the things that happens is if you're not used to it, you can get fearful because you can't think of anything. Like there's nothing there except you can feel something processing. But it's no longer processing with words. And in public conversations, the way they're set up in social media, this is when people get nervous. And so they start strategizing, what can I say next? I'm supposed to show up with an argument. And so if you're doing this practice and you're looking around and now even all that stuff is not there, that's a good sign. And as I forgot how you said it, Jordan, but something new will emerge, or you just enter the conversation again.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Benita. There was a bunch of things that were going on as you were speaking that felt very right to me. And one of the things that specifically came up was that notion of being able to use that feeling of rightness, that I was noticing that as you were speaking, I was returning to a habit that I've developed over the past few years of trying to simultaneously be aware of what it is you're saying and about how I am feeling in relation to it as completely as I can. So that if a particular feeling is coming up, I'm noticing it. And by the way, as you mentioned, that very much gets in the way of any effort to strategize my thinking. If I am trying to think things like words in my head while you are talking, I can listen neither to you nor to myself.
And so, I mean, what do we do if we can't depend on ideas and the constellation of ideas that, you know, we're aware of? How do we move forward? How do we actually move towards clarity?
You're doing it. One of the things that just happened is you asked a question. One of the things that happens when you're asking a question, assuming you're being authentic, is that you're not in a space of knowing the answer to the question. Now, if you don't know something, that means that the things that you know are not getting in the way of your at least considering what is in front of you. Certainly, if knowing is getting in the way, you're not in the direction of clarity. Musicians know this sort of thing. Fortunately, we can go to other domains. Chefs, Benita used the metaphor of cooking, where we're going back down to the spices. If you've built enough skillfulness in some particular domain of activity, many of them are embodied, dance, music, freestyle poetry, cooking, where you're full body and mind and skills and experience are in relationship with a dynamic reality such that there's a way to discern a better or worse result. The feeling of going in the direction of a better result, this is the answer to your question.
Yeah, and I noticed that there's a part of me that's very unsatisfied with that answer, right? Like, part of me that wants to be told what clarity looks like so that I can Yeah, I'm not sure. It's just there's a part of me that's unsatisfied.
Yeah. So the current type of mind that we have will be unsatisfied with this. It's the nature, the kind of cognitive architecture that we have will be unsatisfied with this. And there's, you know, a lot of blah, blah, blah around that. But that's a key good thing. It feels rich, and yet there's, like you said, a part of me that feels unsatisfied. And that's good, because that tyrant in your head, like, the days are over for him, right? Like, and so this that sense of dissatisfaction, but then what you should do is what you can do is find what part of you feels satisfied, and that's your beacon.
If you'd like to have some weapons to go engage in a rebellion against that tyrant, I'm happy to provide them.
So I think that's actually a more discursive, or an answer that we can talk more about, because there are, you know, there are key indicators. One is to know that that kind of dissatisfaction is going to arise. And I think there are enough markers of new ways of working that can be shared. That can be helpful. But the problem is that people, so one is, okay, this type of mind is going to feel dissatisfied. Find what part of your body is satisfied. That's a really powerful injunction. Most people will take it as a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It's very, very simple, and it should be responded to in a very concrete way. That's it. That's all you're saying. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, in fact, one of the lessons I actually learned from Benita long ago was how simple most of these metaphors actually are. Quite often, there are things that show up as being, I suppose, esoteric or mysterious or magical that are real, but very simple. Like, you're feeling a constriction in your belly. It's that level of simple. Like, it's a biological, physical thing that is actually showing up. Now, let me also provide what might be considered the invitation on the other side of this liberation from the tyranny of that kind of mind. There's something that happens when you move beyond that, when you have developed a certain skillfulness in this kind of engagement that allows a relationship with other minds that is generative of what we might call a shared or collective genius. We might call it many other things as well. Now, what's notable about that is a certain number of things. One is, when you've in fact been there and engage in that kind of a collaboration, you know that this is a vastly more powerful place than the previous form of mind. This feels like it's a good choice then to have made that transition. Next is that you're able to perceive why, where, and how interactions of the previous kind are failing, and that they cannot possibly be adequate to the pickle that we find ourselves in. So then finally, you then are able to make the commitment to realize that this new way of collaborating, this new way of forming a higher form of genius working together, is the answer to the question of how to resolve this pickle.
And so now you get a flavor of the despair that I talked about at the end of the video, because people are working so hard and they want so much, a radical shift. But it cannot happen inside that old mind. And I think, I think maybe Daniel Schmattenberger said it. It might have been one of yours, but this notion of people are not imagining how radical the shift must be. Mm. That this is, it's.
So now let me try something. I'll be interested to see how it plays out. What I want to do is I'm actually want to then reinvoke the material of the video. And in this context, present what I personally perceive to be the alchemical highest of what is actually underneath that which is giving rise to Jordan Peterson. So, and this may in fact literally just be me projecting this, which is fine. That is that what we're talking about right now is all happening at the level of first and foremost you as an individual and the development within yourself, a certain courage and a certain capacity and a certain orientation towards rightness, and a certain unwillingness to proceed according to habits when they are not in fact in alignment with this sense of rightness and the building of a capacity to proceed more and more skillfully in that direction. Now, that as a fundamental ingredient of that which is most needful is, from my perspective, true. And to the degree to which this is what he happens to be bringing into the world as the avatar of a archetype, then that is the thing to which I believe if we connect, gives the highest meaning to his being in the world now.
Does that tie into your notions of sovereignty?
Precisely.
Yeah, okay. I was projecting on your potential projection. I wanted to be clear.
Yes, for sure. That is what I'm intending when I'm using that concept and intentionally endeavoring to use the concept that meant something in the old world, mm-hmm. but that actually, I believe, stems from a deeper source that therefore becomes appropriate to use as the resource in this new world.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to try to take a deep dive and take that as an invitation. And I'm going to just put it out in the periphery and see if it is interesting at all to carry forward this idea. So I agree that there's something about Peterson's message about the individual that has traction and is appropriate to the times, right? So it's in contradistinction to the postmodernist kind of socialist communal thing. And I believe that it's very popular and pertinent because of this appeal to sovereignty. Now, what I'm going to try to argue here is that your, Jordan Hall's, view of sovereignty is much more sophisticated than Peterson's understanding of the individual. So, and that therefore they can play tag and be harmonious, but it's careful not to confuse one with the other. So, break. My guests are back, so let me know if the dogs are a problem if they start barking, and I'll tell them to leave.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Benita, I think the point is well taken. A few things come up for me as you're saying that. I think it's well to be said actually now. I guess at the bottom is love, which is to say that I choose to enter into relationship with him first from that source, which does not mean naivete or careless nurturing, but it means to seek within him and in my ability to be in relationship with him that which is highest in me, and also that which I believe is available to raise him into the highest in him. In that context, I sense, though I do not know because I have never met the man, that if I were to enter into a conversation with him from the perspective that I'm bringing to this question of sovereignty, that he would be available to a meaningful extent to listen to it, and that to the degree to which that which I am bringing is in fact more sophisticated, that he would be able to, or at least interested in, endeavoring to grasp that.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Then the last, which I find to be very powerful, is a sense of what I might say thankfulness for the fact that he seems to be doing that which is his to do now. And that I am reasonably certain that I could not possibly endeavor that.
Yes, and I would like to add that I think it's the right place to it's the right trampoline, not postmodernism, to go forward. So in that sense, and that's obviously a guess, but I make a joke. I make a joke in my master's class in consciousness studies, and I say building one narcissist at a time. Because we do highlight individuation in early stages, it looks like building narcissism. Okay, but I believe there's a leapfrog, you know, to go back to a healthy structure and then make that sophisticated. So I'm with you there, and we're making this distinction just to know that there is a distinction. But it's iterative, that this focus on the I or the sovereignty or whatever is iterative. And maybe we could just leave it at that. I mean, we can look at the distinction maybe in a different conversation, but just to note that that's how it seems to be playing.
Thank you. That's what felt to me very beautiful. And I liked, I at least appreciated the joke. So here's one of the things that I've experienced, and that is perhaps the curative or even the response to the concern that there is if one turns one's attention towards building sovereignty in the sense that I'm using it, that this will lead to, let us call, a libertarian dystopia. The curative that I have noticed is that nothing could be further from the truth. This shows up in two ways. One is that we're humans. And as Benita has pointed out many times, humans are obligate tribal. We are, in fact, a social mammal. We cannot be fully realized outside of deep, deep relationship with many other people. You know, an isolated human is a deeply unfulfilled human, nigh unto suicide. And so this is good news. We wouldn't be where we are if that weren't the case, but nonetheless, it is very good news that as you proceed in the path of understanding how to proceed in a direction of building your own sovereignty, almost instantaneously, in fact, I would even say instantaneously, you discover that the only possible way to do that is by doing so in the context of building skillfulness in relationship with other people. And so this is the fabric. This is the very weave out of which sovereignty is made. And then the other side is that as you become more skillful in this relationship and this sovereignty in service of relationship, you no longer feel any fear of the boogeyman of communalism, because you know what it actually feels like to be in right relationship with other people and how it is that you actually are able to be most fully realized as an individual precisely when you're fully met with another individual who has this kind of skillfulness.
So, you know, one of the things we're looking for is what Jung called a fully individuated person. And that person doesn't act individualistic or like a narcissist. It can be confused for one, certainly in our postmodern world. But, and that's a whole other teaching. Like, what does it mean to be an authentic individual? And it is to recognize that you're made up of a, like Whitehead said, a society of cells, each of which is an authentic individual. And we don't, there's, and everything is this emergent fractal complexity that nobody owns. And so when we think of that as communal living, nobody can know what the whole is. Nobody can know what the commune. So you have to again learn how to act your way into emergence without the tyranny of that mind. And too many people are looking at collectives from a systemic thinking. And when you think in systemic terms, you're de-animating. You're always de-animating something. I mean, this is the problem we had when I was growing up in, you know, ecological management. We are going to go manage the ecology. So we de-animate the environment and then act on it. And it's the same problem with climate change. How are we going to manage climate change, he says. You know, climate, it's like we have the power to affect the climate. Climate's always been in control. It controls where we go, what we do, where we plant, where we live, what technologies we create. So just that orientation when you're doing systems thinking is a big caveat for what is adequate to the task. It's not adequate to try to understand the whole in a cognitive complex way, because you're going to de-animate part of the system, right? So that's part of... So when you think of the whole people or people as a collective, you even go beyond trying to isolate people from molecules and air and water and gravity. You know, without gravity, we wouldn't be humans.
So, Daniel, what I think I'd like to do is try to say some aspect of what I perceive and what Benita was saying in a different way. And the effort here is to actually generate clarity. So Anita mentioned the concept of fractal collectives, and I'm just going to focus on that. And she mentioned it first in the context of the society of cells. And to me, what this is pointing out is that when you're in relationship with yourself, you are already in a relationship between selves that are learning how to come into right relationship. And so the first tyrant is not outside of you. The first tyrant is, well, perhaps it is, but when one fully comes in relationship to tyranny, it is first and foremost the tyranny of self on self. Now, what this means is that this is also, again, very good news, because you can practice on just yourself. To the degree to which you have learned a certain fundamental skillfulness in allowing your society of selves to come into right relationship so as to give rise to a self that is not self-tyrannical. Does that make sense to you, Daniel, what I just said? Okay. So to the degree you've built that skillfulness, a sensitivity to how that works and how it feels when that is working, this is the same skillfulness that one uses to come into relationship with other people. It is also the same relationship, the same skillfulness that we use to come into direct relationship with, say, for example, our ecologies. And so there's these nests of self-similar kinds of skills in right relationship at different scales and of different kinds. But nonetheless, they are the same kinds of capacities. I believe that is another way of saying what Benita was saying, or at least certain aspects of it. Bonnie, does that sound right?
Yeah, I think you actually built on it. You know, you built another insight on that.
Yeah, what's occurring to me is the way that this method of looking at the tensions that we identified in the video sidesteps so much of the complexity that often we get sort of trapped in, or that appears as if they're a maze in front of us that we just can get lost in. I mean, I've spent years, I think, wandering down corridors that there was just no value at the end of. And here, I appreciate the way in which I feel like I'm being directed back into my own experience, and kind of in humility thinking to myself, okay, like, am I able to even take a next action now in a trustworthy way? And there's lots of kind of thoughts about how this could, how can this scale? How can we actually do this? What does this actually look like if we were to practice it in larger and larger groups of people? Is humanity ready for it? All these questions are kind of secondary, actually, to my own desire to come into coherence with myself so that I can even participate in this conversation. And I love the way in which, in hearing what Jordan was saying, that even this experience with the three of us is self-similar to, I think, what we're pointing to is the kind of process-based solution to the underlying dynamics that are problematic in the way that we have these conversations that give rise to this, the problems that we see.
That was really great. May I have some reflections on that?
Please.
All right, so there's a couple of things that I think are that pop out really beautifully. They kind of seem to be coming in two streams. So the first is that it turns out that when you've built, let's actually just say mastery, of this coming into coherence with yourself, and I would call this both sovereignty and the capacity to enter into sovereignty, this is the best that you can. This is how you show up most fully. You are at your best. You are able to fully express your genius into the world. And that's not actually a small difference. Here I'm going to shift into a more scientific language, but there's a phenomenon in nature known as resonance. And for me, the best metaphor, or actually example of this, is the tuning of a radio to a radio station. We've used this before, I think, Daniel. That if the radio station is tuned to the frequency of 90.1, and I'm currently, my radio is tuned to 89.9, I'm just barely hearing the signal and there's a whole lot of noise. With a small amount of tuning, suddenly the song pops out. Now we should notice that the energy, the radio station is broadcasting constantly at exactly the same amount of energy. Nothing changed in the amount of energy in the world. What changed is that by coming into resonance with the frequency, an extraordinarily large amount of noise just turned into signal. The spike is very, very large, like 6 orders of magnitude. Now, the fact that this is part of reality, this is part of nature that we can see all over the place, not just in radios, is good news, because this also is what shows up when we come into coherence with ourselves. You know, the difference between being smart and genius is of the same sort. Okay, that's the first stream. And as you say, this happens as we go up the nests. So as we build that skillfulness in ourselves, And then we use that to enter into a collaborative genius, as perhaps we're doing in this group. We're now following the path of maximum resonance, the path of maximum signal to noise ratio, to keep it not at all mystical. So then the second stream is this metaphor I was using earlier of juggling. If you think about juggling, there's a lot of hard work as a baby to come into the capacity to see and grab a ball. And a lot of hard work as maybe a young child to be able to take that ball and hand it from hand to hand. A lot of hard work to be able to go from hand to hand to this thing we might call juggling just two balls. And then there's a lot of hard work to go from juggling just two balls into this completely different thing of actually juggling three balls. And now we're juggling properly. And then there's actually a lot of hard work in going from three to four. But going from four to five isn't quite as hard. From five to six isn't quite as hard. Going, you know, seven, eight, nine starts to get, you get some new difficulty put in there. But the point is that there's an exponential or some kind of positive curve on the returns to the amount of effort that we have to put into this nested fractal. So it is at least plausible. It is at least hopeful that as we're building our mastery of these questions of discerning, are we more in tune with rightness or less, and in coming into coherence, and in gaining insight as a consequence of that, and thereby increasing our capacity to enter into deeper and broader relationships, that there will be, in fact, increasing, well, returns to scale. Things will begin to happen faster and with less obvious hard work.
So I just want to offer a different framing of that. Doesn't map on directly, but if you think about what makes us human, and let's think of language, that the way we use language is particularly, you know, obviously it's fuzzy. Its origins are fuzzy, and we share a lot of the early aspects of that with animals, but there's a point at which it's a truly human gift. And so then we look at, as children learn, like, how do children learn language? Nobody knows how children learn language. There's a lot of theories, but we actually don't know. And we certainly don't have to know how to learn to speak before we learn to speak. Right. And I believe that what Jordan's talking about in terms of preparing the receiver to tune in this signal will happen the same way children learn how to speak. We don't know how it happens. We can, you know, so how do you learn how to speak? It's great to look at babies, and they just receive, and they're open, and they don't have constraints, and the body is taking stuff in, and there's enough space for creative imaginations and to play with words. And the next thing you know, they're highly sophisticated speakers. And I think that everything that's important for humans to learn today will happen like that. And so how do we prepare? What are the injunctions or the instructions to allow that to happen?
Yeah, and I feel like I have my own thoughts about how to make ourselves into people capable of perceiving signal as it kind of crosses our boundaries of awareness. And I'm also, that feels like it might be an interesting question to just kind of end on, right? Like, if we are convinced that the path forward, maybe if I can kind of say it in my own words, is not to be found in having the right ideas, but instead being receptive to, I don't know if the right signals or the signal that is present in all the noise. How do we become the types of people who can hear that signal amidst the noise?
Can I just add two more pieces to it?
Please.
How do we become the types of people who can hear that signal, who can then upregulate and clarify that signal amidst the noise?
So I'll answer the easy part, and it's something that Jordan's been writing about. First of all, it's a lot easier just to start realizing not to spend your time on the noise. I would say that's the easier part, but you need to do that because you need enough space to do the harder part. And yeah.
Yeah, it's like a giant collective moment of clarity with regard to the fact that there's a pretty substantial amount of, frankly, biological addiction going on. I think that's the sort of the easy part. And I love being able to move across domains. So whether your junk food is, in fact, Cheetos, or it is getting involved in meaningless conversations on social media, or it's scrolling down Pinterest's panels hour after hour on your phone, let's just notice that these are addictions and they're likely not helpful. It is not trivial to kick addictions, so let's not be blasé about the challenge associated with, what's the phrase from Alcoholics Anonymous, from getting clean, and holding it, right? These addictions are addictions for reasons that are strong, but that certainly is something that is important.
So that's the baseline, you know, just clear your plate, clean your room, clean your, right? So yeah. There. So building slowly on that, the other thing is take care. I mean, we live in a connected world so that we have the power of scaling. So be very careful what you amplify and what you attenuate or dampen. And this really matters. This really matters. So I would say that's the second small move. And how does that feel in your body? It's just, this is all very meta, but it's very ordinary. Like part of me wishes we were just on this podcast doing the thing that all the podcast people do and just doing that, right? So I can feel that. I can feel that. But that just amplifies perhaps what we didn't want to amplify. And when we started this podcast, Daniel, you and I had to remind ourselves, you know, to be careful that you don't want to fall into that trap. So I just wanted to say it that way because we're talking sophisticated way, but, you know, it can be experienced as rather ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's extraordinarily natural if you simply imagine how this often shows up when at least a reasonably mindful person is having a conversation with a young child.
Mm.
It feels wrong to most people when somebody interacts with, say, a three-year-old in the way that, say, internet television pundits interact with us. It feels wrong. Now, as it turns out, that's how you should interact with everybody. Mm-hmm. Act as if what you're doing really matters. Imagine that what you're doing really, really, really matters, and then act appropriately.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that part of what we're saying here is that you're already amplifying to the degree that you're participating in the world, right? And so just keep being you, but now imagine that everything you're doing is deeply meaningful, important, and that it matters, and it makes a difference. And just notice how that might, that different way of looking at what you're doing might shift your behavior, might have downstream effects. Well, so I really enjoyed this conversation, and it was also deeply uncomfortable for me. I just want to name that. And I think that there's an additional level of like complexity and difficulty when we're doing this kind of in public. Like, you know, to do this with my friends and to do this with my colleagues, like in private, is and I wonder what role this serves to do it in public like this. I guess I'm kind of curious. And I also want to appreciate both of you for being willing to be in public in a liminal space in this way, because I think that as our world is currently set up, that is, for various reasons, let's just say disincentivized, I think. And I appreciate the courage and I think the integrity that is required in order to step into liminal spaces in public. So, thank you both.
I would also like to express a deep thanks to both of you for playing together so nicely. I had some meaningful apprehension in coming into this conversation. In fact, Vanessa actually asked me this morning if I thought that this was a wise conversation, that we, if we had the skillfulness to enter into it and actually have it go well. And I thought about that deeply, and I came to the conclusion that it felt like the process of it coming into being showed some consideration. So thank you on that, Daniel, for example, just the putting together the notes and the asking us to check in. And the fact that we did actually check in and considered it meant that we were coming into something with at least enough consciousness that it was a worthy endeavor. And then, yeah, I mean, this is a little bit like, I don't know, naked acro yoga in the middle of a city park. There's some serious vulnerability here, and it's likely to go poorly. But if it's if it turns out it actually is, from my perspective, the reason why I engage in these kinds of things is because I actually do think that it's very important. And so it's worth the risk.
Yeah, and you know, I love being in the company of people like yourselves. I think the video was awesome help for me. And I think I'm very happy. I just had a reflection a little while back when Jordan was talking, and we were talking about a few steps people could make, and I was like, wow, that's actionable, you know. And that's what we tried to deliver, some actionable clarity. So I just wanted to point that out. And I think I've really appreciate the pushing through the risk that you might feel, especially Daniel, in doing something maybe this odd. and starting, you know, and you just started your podcast, and I just wanted to appreciate that also.
Thank you. And you know, what occurs to me as you say that is the reason that we're here is because I felt what I think you were both pointing to, like a feeling of rightness in my body, right? That a conversation wanted to take place here. And it was uncomfortable. And like, I have a higher loyalty, I think, to that feeling of what needs to happen than I do to my own discomfort.
That is fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you both very, very much. And for those listening, I hope this was interesting. Feel free to reach out to me, or I imagine any of us, if this was compelling to you, because I think that part of building the kind of coherence that we're talking about is networking together in a new way. And so reach out, talk to us, keep the conversation going, and see how it might inform the way that you live your life.